Today is Wednesday, December the 13th, on God's Salvation Through History. As we started out in the class at the very beginning, we were looking at these deliverances that God had did and the salvation that God had did. And basically it was for His glory, that He was to receive glory from the people, and that also that He would receive it from the heathen nations. So when we look at these, try to bear that in mind and look for how the ways that God did receive glory from His own people, from the children of Israel, and also from the heathen nations that were round about, how He received the glory on them. We started last week in Judges chapter 7 and chapter 8 down through verse 21 concerning Gideon against the Midianites. And we started, just basically started at the very beginning concerning the domestication of the camel. Before you had the horses, and then they were able to domesticate the camel. And the camel, it brought about a new means for the nations to conduct commerce and also to provide strength in military actions. And so they were used to that extent on that. They were ornately decorated by the kings with crescents around their necks and chains holding them in decoration. And we find that in Judges chapter 8, verses 21 and 26. So it did give, if you were on foot, the camel did give a definite advantage because of the height that when it goes into battle, with people sitting on it, you easily can strike down those that are walking or those that are underneath and so forth. So it did give a definite, you know, advantage to them. The children of Israel, we find in Judges chapter 6 and verse 1, that the children of Israel are delivered into the hand of Midian for a period of 7 years. And during that 7 years, they face a lot of opposition and oppression. And the Midianites and the Amalekites, along with the children of the east, come up against Israel after they had sown, destroying the produce that was there till there was nothing left for Israel nor their livestock. And you find this in verses 3 and 4, chapter 6. So after Israel had sown their crops and so forth, and when it got time to reap them, then these groups would come in and basically clean them out and take all their stuff. Kind of like that movie that Disney put out, was it Ants or whatever? There's one where Hopper, a grasshopper, would come in and the ants had to give them all their food and put up for them. And this is what the Midianites and the Amalekites did, and along with those around them to the east, that they would come up against Israel after they took the time to plant the crops and everything, and they would come in and take it and destroy it and leave nothing there that was there. The Midianites and the Amalekites are in such number with their cattle and camels that the description of them given in Judges chapter 6 and verse 5 is that they were as grasshoppers without number. So you're talking about a great multitude that would come in and the size of them against the multitude of Israel and in comparison. And because of this severe opposition from being impoverished, Gideon is called to help Israel in verses 6 and 11 of chapter 6. And he is going to be the deliverer through God for them. Gideon is shown encouragement that God will be with him in smiting the Midianites by the angel that came and showed a sign of consuming the offering of Gideon by fire in verses 16 through 23. So again, the foreknowledge that God is showing Gideon that you're going to be successful, the battle's going to be won, and you're going to have the upper hand. And so therefore it's put out there as encouragement to Gideon as he enters into this battle with the Midianites that he would win and he would, you know, get their deliverance. So Gideon gathers men from Manasseh, Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali to form his army. And this is in verse 35 of chapter 6. And Gideon, with his host of people, they encamp at Herod, and all the host of Midian is camped on the north side of Gideon in Judges chapter 7 and verse 1. And so the armies are getting ready there, and God tells Gideon that he has too many people in his army to give the Midianites into his hand. He tells them that you've got too many, that for me to deliver Midian into your hand, it's going to cause an opportunity for Israel to vaunt themselves against God and attribute the victory to themselves. Because if I let you win with such large number, you're going to say, well, we did it ourselves and so forth. So God says we're going to reduce the number even more in verse 2. So Gibeon instructs those men who were fearful and afraid to depart, of which 22,000 returned, leaving Gideon 10,000 men in chapter 7 and verse 3. So he's reduced from 22,000 going on down to 10,000 men. So he had in all 32,000, which was a good sized number, but still, in comparison to the Midianites, it was relatively small. Now it's being reduced down even more. So you can see the faith that's being inquired of Gideon, that here he sees this big multitude out there as the sands and as grass, just large multitudes. And yet God's telling him, you need to get rid of more people. You need to get rid of more. And so instead of shaking Gideon, in fact, he's got to be encouraged by that God's going to be the one that's given the victory. So, again, God declares after that the people are still too many. Well, when you stop and think about it, 10,000 being too many, God says that's still too many. And so, he tells them to do the test of how they drank the water to reduce the army more. And the men that knelt down were sent back, but the men who lapped the water by putting their hands to their mouth were kept, which left Gideon with 300 men. 300. And that's all he had. So he went from 32,000 down to 10,000, down now to 300 men. Now, when you stop and think about it, you know, you're going up against a superior force and a well-armed force and so forth with 300 men. You know, that requires a lot of faith on his part. But again, he had the assurance several times by the angel consuming his sacrifice. And then also it was by the fleece, if you remember, the dew on and the dew off. And God was telling him, you're going to be victorious. And so that's where he kept his faith, is that God was going to do it. So he's further strengthened to remove any fear and doubt by going down to the outside of the enemy's camp and listening to what was said. And in that, the description of the vast army of them is given in Judges chapter 7 and verse 12. Again, that we looked at. They were there along the valley like grasshoppers for multitude. Their camels were without number, as the sands by the seaside for multitude. So it was a very large host that Gideon was going to go against with just 300 men. But he hears, as he went outside the camp, again, God going to great lengths to encourage him, that he hears, Gideon hears, that there's two enemy soldiers talking. And the one soldier is telling of a dream that he had to the other fellow soldier, and he was telling of what it meant in verses 13 and 14. And 13 and 14, he tells him, he says, and when Gideon was come, behold, there was a fellow that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came into a tent, and smote it that it fell, and overturned it that the tent lay along. And his fellow answered and said, this is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel, for into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. Again, you see the heathen nation, again, in essence, giving praise and glory and honor to God, the God of Israel, in this. And also that Midian he's going to overtake us because of God. And so, in hearing that should give great comfort to Gideon, that this is the enemy talking about this. And they're kind of already, I'm not going to say admitting defeat, but these two soldiers and talking and this dream and the telling of it, that they have some inclination, these two do, that, you know, Gideon's going to prevail on that. So upon hearing this, Gideon worships God and prepares his 300 men for battle in verse 15. I think it's appropriate to see that when he hears this, that he worships God. And that's the praise and the glory and the honor that Gideon is given to God because of this deliverance. The deliverance hasn't happened yet. But to Gideon, it's as sure as it has happened already because of what he has heard. So he worships God. He divides his army of 300 men into three companies and gives them each a trumpet and a lamp in an empty pitcher. In verse 16. So they're there. You're going to have 300 men divided into three groups, about 300. They're going to be spread around the camp of the Midianites. And they're going to have with them a trumpet. Then they're going to have a pitcher. There's going to be a lamp inside it. And, of course, with it being concealed, you're not going to be able to see the light or anything. And they're stationed around the enemy camp in the middle of the night. And when Gideon blows his trumpet, they all blow their trumpets. They break the pitchers in their hands, revealing the light of the lamps and crying, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon," in verses 17 through 20. Now picture all around the host that they're encamped in there, that big multitude host, and you have just 300 people strategically placed around that in the dark. All of a sudden you see the blowing of the trumpets, you hear the sound, then you see these lights all around and you're encircled by these lights. And of course at night you're not going to realize and understand that it's just 300 people. You're going to think, well, we're surrounded because of the way they were doing. And they're going to think, you know, we're already surrounded, the enemy's crept up on us, it's night time, we're not ready to defend ourselves. And then also the crying out of the sound and so forth, that it's Gideon and he's here and they're ready to do battle. The enemy believes that they're surrounded. Plus the blowing of the trumpets could have panicked the camels, causing them to stampede. When you got all this commotion going on at night. The enemy sets his sword against his fellow soldier throughout their whole camp. And the host fled thereof as done by the Lord. Now when you stop and think about it, the Lord had to be involved in that to cause such confusion that the enemy soldiers would turn upon themselves and start slaying their own group. But that's what happened. The enemy sets his sword against his fellow soldier, and there's such confusion and such panic that they start fighting each other and killing each other. So basically, Gideon doesn't really have to do a whole lot. They fled. The Lord set this in order in Judges chapter 7 and verse 22 on that. The 300 blew the trumpets. The Lord set every man's sword against his fellow. The Lord is the one that set it. Now, he did that. I don't know. That's between God and them. Through his providence, he set their sword against each other. And they kind of started annihilating themselves. Judges chapter 8 tells them of Gideon pursuing the kings of the Midianites until he has subdued them all, delivering Israel from the Midianites. As you can clearly see in this, this had to do with the Lord's deliverance, by which is 300 men in the middle of the night, and they really didn't have to do much of a battle. So the praise has to go to God. And I'm sure that afterwards that Gideon probably worshipped God along with the rest of Israel that were there, because it said even before, when he heard that he was going to have such victory, that he worshipped God. So that is how God delivered Gideon from the Midianites and also Israel. And when you think about it, that's quite an astounding feat to do it, where it's just 300 men and they hardly don't do anything. And you would think, why in the world would the enemy start fighting against themselves? But it shows the great confusion that was going on, that they start killing each other, and they're the ones that did it. So that's one that I have picked out to show the deliverance of God through them. Any question or comment?
I just noticed, Larry, always, because this whole battle starts at night when Gideon goes down to hear the dream and to come to this, that this would have been at night with the pitchers. I mean, that's why the torches would be seen. Torches just illuminate a very little bit. So it's not like everybody's rolling out, running into each other, and knowing who's who or what's what. And That really added to the confusion. They probably didn't have torches of their own to see who they were hitting or what they were doing. And in the dark, it was just every man for himself.
Yeah, and it just...
total chaos.
That and the panic, all that set in. And plus then, you know, with the trumpets sounding and everything, you got the camels that would have been stirred up and trying to, you know, being spooked and so forth, and all the shouting and everything, and it just, you know, it had to be the Lord's workings.
Yeah.
In the things that they did. So no matter what the size of the battle is, no matter how great it may seem, how the odds might be, again, it's encouragement to us that God overcomes, no matter what it is. He fights for His children. The next one is Judges chapter 20 that I picked out. And it's the war of Israel against Benjamin. And of course, Israel against Benjamin, they are technically, as you would say, brothers, as far as kindred and so forth, but that happens. In Judges chapter 19, we have the account of the Levite who was traveling with his concubine, and he lodged in Gibeah that belonged to Benjamin, in Judges 19, 1 through 19. And we see here that the men of the city of Benjamin, men of his city, took his concubine, and they abused her until she died, in Judges chapter 19, verses 20 through 30. And along that time, the Levite, if you remember, he took the concubine, cut her up into 12 pieces, and sent her throughout all the tribes of Israel to let it be known what a, you know, the travesty that had took place, which shouldn't have took place. And all the children of Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, along with the land of Gilead, gathered together as one, being 400,000 footmen that drew sword, in Judges chapter 20, verses 1 and 2. So here you have 400,000 that have gathered together. And this army of Israel comes up against the city of Gibeah, asking the tribe of Benjamin to turn over those who had done this offense to the Levite. Send the men of Belial out that had done this, that had abused the concubine and that had abused her until she died, and that this should not have happened, and they did, and it refers to them as men of Belial. The children of Benjamin, along with those of Gibeah, being 26,700 that drew sword, declined to turn over those men and prepared to go to war against Israel. Verses 14 through 17 of Judges chapter 20. So here you've got 400,000, and here you've got 26,700. So the children of Israel inquire of God if they should go up against the children of Benjamin, and God declares that Judah should go up first in Judges 20 and verse 18. God gives the blessing. They inquire of God. God says, yeah, the children of Judah go up first. So the children of Israel went to battle, and the children of Benjamin prevailed and slew 22,000 men of Israel, verses 20 and 21. Israel definitely had the vast majority of the troops. They were had the Benjamin outnumbered. And God had even gave His blessing and said, yeah, Judah is to go up first. So it's kind of a surprise to Israel that they lost the battle. They had the superiority. God says, yes, go up. But yet Benjamin prevailed and 22 men of Israel died. The men of Israel encouraged themselves and again inquired of the Lord, weeping until evening, asking counsel of God if they should continue in this battle. Verses 22 and 23. We've got the vast numbers. You said to go up, God, and now we got defeated. God, you know, and they're weeping until evening and asking, you know, do we still continue in battle or not, God? The Lord answers that they should go up against Benjamin again. And so Israel does so on the second day, verses 23 and 24. Again, Benjamin prevails and slays 18,000 men of Israel, verse 25. Now, at this point in time, what would you do? You've asked the Lord. You've got the far superior numbers. You ask Him. He says, yeah, I'll go up. You go up, you're defeated. You're in mourning. You ask him again. God says, yes, go up again. So you go to battle the second day. You're defeated again. So what would have been the mindset of the people of Israel at this point in time?
God.
Something's amiss somewhere, right? I mean, we've been up twice. God said to go, and we got defeated. Now, if you kind of go take this in today's place, most people then would start doing what? Who would they start placing the blame upon? They'd start placing the blame upon God. God, you let this happen. This is your. Why'd you do this? You know, you're a mean God. You let this happen, and so forth. The people weep and they fast before God again until evening, and they offer burnt offerings and peace offerings before God in verse 26. And Phinehas the priest inquires of God before the Ark of the Covenant if they should continue in battle or cease. And God declares that they should go up, for tomorrow he would deliver them into their hands. First two times, he just said go up to battle. This third time, he says, I'm going to deliver them into your hands. Verses 27 and 28. I'm sure this is probably a little bit of a test for Israel, because in doing this, it would greatly be testing you or proving you concerning Israel and their faith in God. Twice he said, yeah, I'll go. Twice they got defeated. The third time they inquire, God says, yes, go. Tomorrow I'll deliver them into your hands. So, it's kind of a test, proving test for them as far as their faith. That, well, do we go again this third time after we've seen what happened the two times? So, Israel sets ambushes around Gibeah, and they go to battle again on the third day. The children of Benjamin come out of the city and begin to kill 30 men of Israel. So, Israel flees, like they had done before, the other two days, and draw them from the city into the highways in verses 30 through 32. Got the overconfidence of the children of Benjamin in thinking, well, this is going to be like day one and day two. Let's go. We're ready. We done defeated them twice. They have a bigger army. We beat them. They're trying to do this again. They're fleeing again. And so they go after them. The 10,000 chosen men of Israel, though, prevail against the men of Benjamin, slaying 25,100 men of Benjamin. So in this third day, you see that 10,000 slay 25,100 in verses 34 and 35. Now Israel had set the ambushes around Gibeah, and they let the Benjamites think that they were smiting the Israelites as before, verses 36 and 37. And so then, after they go out of the city and start chasing the Israelites, the Israelite ambushes then went into the city and smote it with the edge of the sword, and they made a great flame with smoke arise out of the city. Verses 38 and 39. And when Benjamin saw that, they looked behind them, and they see this great smoke coming out of the city. And they saw the flame of the city ascend up to the heaven, and saw Israel turn upon them. There was a signal. Israel turned upon them then, and the ambushes also went out to them, that they turned upon them, that those of Benjamin started fleeing to the wilderness. And so Israel did end up smiting Benjamin in verses 40 through 48. It took three times. The first two, you can surmise, had to have been a test to prove Israel as far as their faith in God. Also, you would have had to give more glory and honor to God in that. And also they had inquired before the Ark of the Covenant, and God showed promise on the third time that, you know, tomorrow I will deliver them into your hand. Okay? So Benjamin had to realize also that God was with Israel to that extent, because they had lost the battle after two times before. But basically, it was, I would say, an encouragement to me, an encouragement to Israel to make their faith stronger. Why God let them be defeated the first two times, that belongs to God. I have no idea why, but they were. But God assured them on the third time they would be delivered, and it was due to Him. It may have been to show them, with their vast number of people, that the battle is not yours, regardless of how many people you have. even though you had them outnumbered, it is the Lord's battle. And that's what he had told them before they set out, that these battles would be his and that he would be fighting for them. So God has his ways of making sure that he keeps those humble in that respect. So that's with Israel and the Benjamites on that one. Any question or thoughts? The next one I have then is Jonathan against the Philistines in 1 Samuel, the 14th chapter, verses 1 through 46. And we find Saul with about 600 men tarrying in the uppermost part of Gibeah with Jonathan in 1 Samuel 14, verses 1 and 2. And they were tarrying there, and Jonathan decides to go up into the Philistine garrison, and he invokes the help of his armor bearer in verse 1. And Jonathan tells his armor bearer that God may work with them against the uncircumcised Philistines. And so he's convincing his armor bearer, let's go over there, just you and me, which going over to the Philistine garrison, they're going to be way outnumbered. But his resolve is that there is nothing to restrain God from saving by many or by few, is his comment in verse 6. And that's Jonathan's resolve concerning God, is that it doesn't matter where he saves by many or by few, it may be perchance that he's going to save Israel by us, by just you and me. So the armor bearer agrees to go with Jonathan, and Jonathan develops a plan as to determine if they should continue when they allow the Philistines to know that they approach, in verses 7 and 8. And basically, what it amounted to is when Jonathan showed himself to the Philistines, there was a question that would be back and forth. So it's not like warfare in our day and time where they would have not asked questions and did this and that. But here they were asking questions. And if the Philistines replied, "Stand still until we come to you," then Jonathan would stay and not go to them. But if they replied, "Come up unto us," then Jonathan would go up in assurance that God had delivered them into his hands. This was going to be their sign. Verses 9 and 10 of 1 Samuel 14. You stop and think about this a minute. Is that Jonathan had this in his mind. If it's this answer, I'm not going to go up. If it's this answer, then we're going to go up because it's assurance that God has delivered them into our hand. There's no knowledge given here that God had already dictated to Jonathan that if I answer this way or that way, it's going to be. That's not given. This is the faith that Jonathan has in God, and God answering that in regards to he put this question out there, and God answered through his means to give Jonathan that answer. I mean, he picked these out, you know, out himself. It wasn't God said, "Well, now here's the plan first, and then you go up and do it." Jonathan did this, and it showed God working with him and backing him up in this, more or less. I hate to use that term, but it's, you know, because Jonathan made that request, and that's how the Lord answered it. So that was going to be their sign, the assurance that God, if they said come up, that God would give them the battle. After Jonathan reveals himself to the Philistines, they tell him to come up and they would show Jonathan a thing or two. Come on up, verses 12. And so Jonathan and his armor bearer slay about 20 Philistines in about a half acre of land. And the Philistines have terror set into them so bad because of what's happening and all the commotion and everything. And with that, it also mentioned that there was the earthquaking underneath them. Verses 13 through 15. Now, you can surmise, if you want to, whether God had produced an earthquake at that time to help Jonathan in that. It just says that they had terror set in on them so bad, and with the earth quaking underneath them, that they started fleeing. And Saul's watchmen see the multitude of the Philistines melting away, going in every direction, in verse 16. And Saul inquires at the Ark of the Covenant with the priest who had left the camp and found out that Jonathan and his armor bearer were gone. Verses 17 and 18. So Saul assembled the people and they came to the battle only to find the Philistines fighting among themselves. In verse 20. Again, the same type of scenario with the Midianites. Here the Philistines are in terror, they run around, they're fighting among themselves. And they end up fleeing, and we're told that God saved Israel that day. In verses 21 through 23. God had worked in the way that He did through His providence, that He assured them the victory. And they did gain the victory. Of course, we know afterwards you read about the rash promise that Saul had made. Well, not a promise, but the order that he gave that the children of Israel weren't supposed to eat anything or whatever. And Jonathan was the one that did dip into the honey and ate it. And Saul said, he must die. And the people saved Jonathan from death on that and what he had did in delivering them from the Philistines. So, again, you can dive into it deeper as far as God working in His deliverance on that. But in regards to Jonathan and his armor bearer, it had to encourage their faith tremendously. Because in answer to the questions that they had, it just wasn't coincidence that the right answer came up. That when they asked a question, that the right answer came up. That's just not coincidence. That was through the Lord. So the Lord did deliver them. Any question or comment? Okay. We'll go ahead and stop there before we get into the next one then. And we'll get into the next one next week and go from there then.